One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Motormouth podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between.
We've partnered with the Brain Tumor Charity, helping to raise awareness and help find a cure. Thanks to our partnership, we've been able to create a short series of special podcasts uncovering those within the motorsport community who've been affected by those devastating diagnoses. You can hear those stories and more, including the Williams F1 team's planning director, Richard Jones, right now on your chosen podcast player. The charity work all year round to help develop research and raise awareness. And if you're looking to challenge yourself this new year, why not sign up to the Brain Tumor Charity's Brain Power Challenge? Simply choose a challenge that will boost your brain health, from meditation to 10K runs to mega Sudoku, and set your challenge to either silver, gold or platinum difficulty level. Every penny you raise will be spent on the charity's medical research. £250 covers the cost of one day of world-class medical research into kinder and better treatments for brain tumours, which really does make a difference. Follow the Brain Tumor Charity on social media to learn more and to sign up. Boost your brain today to boost other brains tomorrow, because a cure can't wait. This podcast is brought to you by Rodin Cars. Based in New Zealand, but with a new HQ open in Donington Park in the UK, with the Rodin FZ, you have the keys to experience a whole new level of driving performance. A supercar like no other, giving you the chance to feel pure driving pleasure. Designed for easy maintenance, you could own the F1 lifestyle and strive for that perfect lap time with the Rodin FZ. There's plenty of purchasing options, including after-sale partnership, where your FZ is looked after on and off track by an official Formula Racing team, storage, and exclusive track access to Rodin's very own circuit in New Zealand. With Rodin and the Rodin FZ, you don't just drive a car, you experience the performance of an open-wheel, high-performance supercar. For more information on Rodin and how you can get involved, visit rodin-cars.com.
Hello, my name's Tim Sylvie, and today we're excited to have someone a bit different on the show. But first, let's come to you, Harry Benjamin, my new celebrity friend. You've been a busy boy. Bring us up to speed. Tell the people your latest exciting news.
Well, thank you very much. Well, if you haven't seen, I'm very pleased to say that I'm the new commentator for Formula 3 this year. So I'm very excited to jump on board with that after my little outing in Austria last year. And for those Porsche Supercup fans, I'll be right back doing that as well. Don't forget the Supercup. Yeah, really excited to do that. It's a bit scary. It's a huge grid. It's very daunting to take over from Alex Jakes, who is the leader in support categories as well. But he just is doing far too much. So he can't do it anymore. So I'm very pleased that F1 have given me the opportunity to do that. So yeah, yes. Exciting.
Very exciting. I put on LinkedIn that I felt like a proud dad. I could actually technically be your father in age.
Yeah, you'd be a young dad.
Yeah. But no, really pleased for you. I think it's a hugely exciting year ahead, and not the last exciting news.
No, I will be doing some other championships. Yes, can't say anything at the moment. Exciting.
Hush, no, NDAs and all that. But before we bring in today's guest, just another reminder about our Discord channel, which is going berserk. Like, I'm still totally perplexed by Discord. And I'm doing my best to join in. Imi is holding the fort for us and adding loads of content on there all the time. But there's loads of chat going on there. There's a lot of people there. So search for our Discord channel or find the link to it in our socials and join in the conversation over there. And on all our socials, of course. Right. Shall we bring in today's guest?
I think so. Let's do it.
So today we're joined by a man who's worked with some of the biggest names in racing. He's a French-born race engineer that made his way up from Prima, Trident, Toyota in Formula One with Jarno Trulli, Vitaly Petrov, Pastor Maldonado, Romain Grosjean, Julian Palmer, and of course, the legendary Kimi Raikkonen, with whom he shared Kimi's last race in our beloved sport. We're here to hear about his life, opinions, aspirations, and views. Now let me get this right. Julien Simon Cheton. Welcome to the Motormouth podcast in my best French accent.
Thanks for having me, and well done for your French accent. Very good.
Got that out of the way.
I give you a triple A.
Oh, merci beaucoup.
Très bien, très bien. Julien, again, a pleasure to have you on the show. Where are you at the moment in the world? Where are you joining us from?
I'm in the UK, in Cotswolds.
Oh, very nice.
Lovely. Yeah.
Lovely part of the world.
Whereabouts?
Near Bolton-on-the-Water.
Oh, fantastic. Love it. Yeah, very envious.
Very nice. Well, and it's half decent weather today, I suppose. But, that's the Cotswolds. Not quite France this time. But take us back to, this is how we start all of our shows. We go right back to the start and how it all began for you, Julien, to your early life and childhood and where you grew up and what, you know, your childhood was like. Was there racing around you in the family, in the blood? What led you to becoming involved in motorsport?
I was not part of a racing family, let's say. I grew up in the south of France near the sea, so I had a pretty normal childhood on this aspect. But what changed for me is that my dad brought me to Monaco Grand Prix in the late 80s, and that kind of sparked a huge interest to me. And straight after that, I said, Dad, I want to work here. With this very noisy car, it looks very fascinating, and that's how it all started. So,
and was it always going to be down a particular route, or did you think I want to drive those cars?
I always like to drive cars, karting, these kind of things, but very clear, very early, and I became clear that I was not probably talented enough to become a driver. And it would have been easier to become an engineer and working my way through, let's say, the up to F1, let's say. So that's always been that's what I say. I talk to a lot of young engineers who ask me a lot of questions. I've done a YouTube video actually recently. I don't know if you've seen it, how to become a Formula One engineer, because I'm being asked all the time how you do that and how you become, because I've tried to give them my experience, and not saying that's the way to do it, but saying that's my way. That's how I did it. And
I think as well, you've got to perhaps have a certain type of brain for it, because Harry and I have started looking into this, because we're going to be interviewing a couple of guys in a few weeks' time who have studied the science of a racing driver's brain. And I think perhaps some people are not just... they're not programmed in the right way to be a racing driver. This book's actually called The Science of the Racer's Brain by Alan Dove and a guy called Dr. Otto Lappi. And it's quite an interesting study into the way a brain works and what it takes to be a racing driver, or perhaps even what it takes to be a race engineer. It's not for everybody. I mean, I know I couldn't do it because I don't have a logical bone in my body. Presumably, there are certain attributes that you have that help you get ahead in that kind of field?
Yeah, I think so. Well, basically what you need to become a race engineer, you need a mechanical engineering degree that gives you the basis of the job of engineering principle, let's say. But then that's not it. I don't think there is many school. I think there is Cranfield in UK that are really specialized in motorsport, but there is not many university or school that will prepare you for this job. And it's all about the network, the experience you will make with the people and going into the your career path, starting in go-kart, in Formula 3, then meeting people, and then you know, your network of people increase, and then you climb up to F2 and then finally F1. So, but it's not, especially on my job, is there is a huge part of engineering of scientific, let's say, your contents, but there is also a huge part of communication and understanding the people and being good at communicating. For example, you're not going to work with Kimi the same way than with Julian or Romain. You know, they're all different. You're interacting with a driver manager, with team principal. So it's very, you know, there is a lot of interaction like this that is very interesting. So yes, it's a technical job, but there is also a big part of understanding human feeling and communication, which always interested me. So
it's fascinating. So you talk about, you know, making your way up through the ranks there. What was your first sort of hands-on experience in a race team? How did that first opportunity come about for you?
Well, on the race team, if I remember, it was a very, very small team in the southwest of France near Bordeaux. And I called the guy like 1,000 times to get an internship, let's say. And the guy said, okay, but I can't pay you anything, so because I have no money, but yeah, you can come over and see what happens. So I drove with my little car up to there, I remember. And it was amazing experience, but we were... As I said also to these people who asked me, I literally started at the bottom of the ladder, literally sleeping on the truck, cleaning the wheel of the truck and these kind of things. And that's how I started. So really from the bottom, let's say.
Well, that's the way to do it, isn't it? And then I suppose, was it always Formula One, the goal right from there? Did you have your mind set of, right, I'm going to work my way up to Formula One?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's funny how people have that sort of single-minded approach. Mm. And you did. You got to, well, you went, first of all, jumping forward a little bit, 2007, Toyota Motorsport, working with Jarno Trulli, who actually I worked with back in the day, because my first ever role in Formula One was working with Panasonic, who were the title partner of the Toyota F1 team way back when. And so I had a bit of exposure to Jarno Trulli, who I think actually... He created a wine at some point. He had his own wine.
He already had a vineyard at the time, yeah?
Yeah.
With his manager, yeah.
That's right, yeah. I think I've consumed a few bottles of that probably far too quickly. But what was that experience like? How did that opportunity with Toyota come about? And what was it like working with someone like Jarno?
Well, rolling back a bit for you to understand. So I did my last year university, let's say, in the States, in Denver. And that was a very, very profitable time. I work with many series and many category, Australian V8. I work, and then I work on a seminar on creating, on vehicle dynamic, all this kind of things. So that was very interesting. But at the end of this time, I wanted to go back to Europe. So I contacted the Prema, which is a very famous team. And it was they were very famous already at the time. And they say, yes. So that was effectively my first proper job in Italy. And at the time, we were the Toyota junior team. So hence the link with Toyota, basically. So we were having all the Toyota young driver. They were one of the first team to create this kind of driver academy, which you see now plenty with Red Bull, Mercedes, these kind of things. And I spent 4 years there. Already have good connection with Toyota, meeting people through my work with Prema, let's say. Then I moved 1 year in GP2 to Trident, and then I got an opportunity in Toyota to go there. And I went there, I did a good interview with a PowerPoint presentation all the time and things like this. And I think they were quite impressed with that and pleased. And then I got a job. So I started in a test team. At the time, F1 team still had a test team. But only for a couple of months, if I remember. And then I think the season after already I was in a race team. So and then it all started like this.
And this is in Cologne, right?
That was in Cologne, yeah.
For those that don't know, just explain the setup in Cologne, because they've got a very impressive facility there, right?
Huge, yeah. Two wind tunnel, huge facilities, and have some good story actually on the wind tunnel. The first time they created, it's quite a simple building. You know, the Japanese, they don't like a flashy thing, so it's quite cubical, or it's not very pretty, but it's very functional. But the story was like they had these two full-scale wind tunnels, which you can imagine consume a lot of electricity. And apparently, I wasn't there, but the first time they put both wind tunnels on, the nuclear power plant or Cologne or something, they call and say, what the hell are you doing? Because they saw their energy consumption going down like this. So after that, they had to shift basically the... They could not put together both of them at the same time. So there was a kind of story like this. Quite interesting.
God, sending heart palpitations through the Japanese government, I'm sure, and the French government too. Well, let's move across to Caterham next, because that was where you got another role in 2010.
Well, yeah, exactly. So basically the story is that end of 2009, Toyota decided to close the F1 program following. It was not really a problem of money, because Toyota, it was more a political push, let's say. After the crisis in 2008, all the manufacturers like Mitsubishi, Honda in Japan, they were all bringing down all their Subaru, stopped their involvement in rally. So it was more political things to close it down. So they kept a very, very small core of people there, but all the others were made redundant, let's say. And basically the whole race team, including the chief engineer, the race engineer, the performance engineer, and Jarno moved to this team that Mike Gascoigne was creating in England. That was called Lotus Racing with Tony Fernandez. And we literally started from zero. I remember my first day there, I arrived in January. It was in, what was the name? I can't remember the name. Next to Norwich, where they were based.
Yeah.
Hingham.
Yes.
And I arrived at my desk, and still literally we had like cable still hanging around, not finished. I had a laptop, and that's it. In the laptop, I had Word, Excel. Good luck. In 2 months, you're going missing.
And then coming from Toyota, where you've got everything, all the resources in the world, and then bang, welcome. It must have been a bit of a shock.
That was a shock to the system, but we made it, and We did go to our first race. We did finish the first race in Bahrain, I remember, with Jarno. And it was an incredible achievement. So,
what was it like, though? You know, obviously it must have been a fairly tough time going forward, you know, a team that was at the back of the grid and such promise as well going through that. How do you deal with the change of going from fairly competitive Toyota to then, you know, obviously not being as competitive? Is that quite challenging for you?
Yeah, it was huge, because Toyota, we had everything. We had like, they were treating the people quite well, actually. So, you know, they had a lot of money, but they were also giving a lot, and ultimately didn't work out for a million of reasons. But then going to Lotus, a much smaller team fighting at the back, it was a very, very challenging. So you need to adapt to, if you used to 100, you need to do with one, you know what I mean? It was all a complete different set of the way you work, basically.
And in 2015, you're working with Romain Grosjean. He's had a really interesting career for a number of reasons. Very talented driver, had his issues when he came into Formula One. What was it like working with him, and how do you rate him as a driver?
I was talking to him 2 days ago. So we're still in very good contact with Romain. He was a very, very good, exceptional driver. Bear in mind that before arriving in F1, he won everything, all the championship, you know, Formula Renault, Formula 3, GP2, and exceptionally talented. Unfortunately, he arrived in F1 at the time with Fernando. I think it was 2009. Mm. And that was maybe a little bit early, and he got a bit, the car wasn't that good, and he got really difficult time. And then with the Lotus days, we had also the problem with the finance. If you remember, I remember doing actually his last podium and my last podium in F1. That was Spa 2015. And we did finish third. And
Didn't you have the bailiffs?
At the end of the race, we had the bailiff putting a seal on the track team hadn't paid. Imagine a bit. So you arrive with I had a bottle of champagne, and you see all the bailiff looking up all the... the track that was incredible. But to come back to your question, yeah, he's very, very talented driver. He had a big moment, I think, when he had his crash in Spa. If you remember when he flew over Alonso and Hamilton and he got banned for the run race.
Yeah.
And I think that was a big, big moment on his career. He did a lot of work with a psychologist to understand what was the issue. And they found out actually that he had something to do with this peripheral vision. Let's say that was a bit too much like this when he had to be.
Yeah.
And that's fascinating. It's fascinating because when you see also in a simulator, when driver, you see what driver are looking when they are driving is incredible. They are, you see their eyes, and we did a lot of study like this. They're not looking at the corner. They're looking at the next two corners when they arrive in one corner because they are going so quick that when they arrive in the corner, their focus is already two corners after.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's fascinating.
Yeah, it really is. And that's all part of this whole brain makeup of racing drivers. And, you know, it's, I think one of the things that I've already learned reading this book, it sounds like I'm plugging this book, I'm not, but it's just quite interesting. And I'm only a couple of chapters into it, but it's really interesting because people think they can be a racing driver. Everyone thinks they can race cars because it's relatable. You know, I drive a road car, therefore I can drive a race car. It's just a bit faster and a bit more dangerous. That's what my brain's thinking. Whereas when you watch a cliff diver or someone doing some other extreme sport, that's unrelatable. So your brain goes, no, I can't do that, but I can drive a car. But people can't do it. It's such a talent, isn't it? I mean, people like Roman have an incredible talent for driving very, very fast. And just because I drive a road car doesn't mean it's going to translate into being a racing
driver. Exactly.
Yeah.
No, it's very demanding and very, very hard job. So
a quick interruption to the show to remind you to check out our sponsor, Rodin Cars. Rodin are a bespoke formula-style supercar manufacturer based in New Zealand. With their vehicle offering, this is the only place where you can truly live the F1 lifestyle. With the easy-to-run, easy-to-maintain, and even easier-to-drive Rodin FZ, you can live the dream of hunting down those final tenths of lap time whilst being fully supported by the team at Rodin, who will provide you with after-sale care, storage options, exclusive use of their incredible track in New Zealand, and courtesy of Formula Racing Team Tech Grand Prix will run, set up and maintain your vehicle on and off the track. The Rodin FZ is a vehicle like no other, perfect for any true car aficionado in search for that elite performance. To find out more, head to rodin-cars.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Fascinating, actually, as well, with Roman, how he got, you know, his second, third chances. Not many drivers get that. You know, after 2009, he actually managed to come back from that. And then again, obviously, after the race ban. So to have that sort of mental capacity and drive as well is very impressive. The list of names goes on. We can't touch on every single driver you've worked with, but someone we did want to touch on was Jolyon Palmer. He had his challenges, obviously, flying the flag for the United Kingdom in Formula One. Perhaps, you know, under the scrutiny of the media quite a bit. How was your relationship with him? How did he deal with the pressures that came his way? He had some formidable teammates as well in Hülkenberg and Magnussen. But he's had a great lease, second lease of life, I think, as a pundit on Five Live. But what was your time working with Jolyon like?
Fantastic. Again, I had a very good relationship with all the drivers I work with, including Jolyon. And we were texting again last week. And had a really good time. He was a hard worker. And as you said, he had a lot of pressure from the media, being a Brit driver and with Hamilton next. the car was not really competitive, so it's difficult to show what you can do. But a really good time and really good memories, and we did some good points with him at the time. And I think he deserved more, but unfortunately, that's the car we had 16, so yeah, that was a big issue.
I felt sorry for him. There were a couple of interviews where I just thought, just give the guy a break. Like he's not killed anyone. He's just driving a race car. Just leave him alone. Like, he got really vilified. It was a tough time.
But he was a hard worker, and I'm sure he still is. And we had a really, really good time together. So.
He's certainly doing his thing on behind the microphone now. He's a fantastic pundit and commentator. Now let's move ahead to probably the I think it's fair to say the most high profile driver that you've raced with, in the form of Kimi Raikkonen. And we obviously see Kimi from a fan's perspective and love him for his character and the way he acts with the media, and you know, doesn't hold back. What was it like working with him from the inner sanctum? Being there with him, is he like that? How we see him on TV, is that how Kimi is?
No. So just to roll back a little bit, I've known Kimi since the Lotus day. At the time, I was working with him since when he came back in 12 and 13. So I was his performance engineer at the time, and I was there when he won the race in Abu Dhabi with the famous "Leave me alone, I know what I'm doing." So I was not the main engineer at the time, but I was in the back and working with him closely. So then he went to Ferrari, and when he decided to go to Alpha, we worked together, but we already knew each other since a long time. And that's very important, because he's not someone who gives his trust very easily, you know what I mean? But no, he's very different. He never liked... What he likes, Kimi, is very simple. He likes driving the car. He likes to talk to his engineers, improving the car. And everything else is annoyance and disturbance for him. And he's not interested at all. So to answer the question, I would say no, he's not. He's different. The image that he shows, which is also a bit part of his brand, you know what I mean? Yeah. And I think that's important, that that's a bit like Michael Schumacher in the past, you know what I mean? They were showing a bit this aspect, a bit cold, a bit. And Kimi also is he's part of his brand, I would say. But yeah, he's very different.
Yeah.
What are some of the main kind of memories you leave working with Kimi with? What stands out the most?
Him shouting at me a lot on the radio. No, I'm joking.
Sort this fucking car out, for God's sake.
How is fucking you tell me? We have so many YouTubers.
So many.
Oh my God! They even made a cartoon that I had to show to my son. It was quite funny. But I have a lot of great memory. The win in Abu Dhabi was amazing. Then the win in Melbourne 2013 as well, and with him in Alpha in particular, we had really good time together. So we did some really good race, and it was fantastic working with him. So I learned a lot as well on my side, how to be a better race engineer just working with him. So,
and any emotions on that in that last race at the end of Abu Dhabi? Didn't end in quite the fairy tale manner, but any emotions from either side?
It was quite unfortunate. I remember I had prepared my little speech for her, because I knew we would have made a driver of the day. So
I had
made a little speech, and unfortunately I could not say. But yeah, it was very emotional. Obviously, there was his wife, their kids, they came on the grid, and all the people, the journalists, the attention. It was very emotional. So it's just a shame he finished the way it is, but that's racing, unfortunately.
Now, bring it back to basics for us in terms of your function over a race weekend. When the race is on, what is your role? How would you describe what you do to someone who had no idea?
Well, very simply, I'm in charge for the performance of the car, basically. So I'm the only one allowed to talk to the driver. And I have working with me, and that's very important for the people to understand. To do this job, you don't need to be ultra specialized in one area, because there are so many specialized. So you're working with a performance engineer that will work on the setup, a tire engineer, an aero engineer, an engine engineer, reliability. So there is all these people who are specialized in their area, and my objective, my role is to filter all this information. So let's say you receive 20 information and you say, okay, I collect them and I put them together and I give that to Kimi to make the car faster, basically. Plus dealing with the mechanics, the job lists, so organizing the role of the what the mechanics have to do. And obviously changing the setup of the car to make the driver faster. So very simply said, that's my role, let's say.
You make that sound incredibly straightforward, and it's clearly not. I mean, it's you can't be a hot-headed character, I'd imagine, to do this job. I mean, with all that information flying in at you whilst trying to talk to racing drivers who have their hands full, how do you keep calm? Is that just in you, do you think, or have you had to teach yourself?
I think so. Well, obviously, a driver like Jolyon or Romain could have been a bit punchy at the time, but Jolyon was very calm, Marcus, exceptional, so it was really easy. The problem when you have a driver like Kimi who started, who is so emotional when he replied to you on the radio, and when he starts, he sounds like he's shouting, but he's not personal. It's not like he's shouting at me. He might shout at the situation. The drink system business is a good example. He say he can't understand why this drink system could not work. And you have, sure, even when he was in Ferrari, I'm sure there was plenty of story like this. But so when he screams on the radio, he's not specifically screaming at me.
Yeah.
It's just his way to react to things. But yeah, you have to do your job and you have to stay calm. And many times I had people coming to see me saying, how do you deal with that? Because they're all like shaking and almost paralyzed. They could not speak, you know what I mean? But yeah, well, you have to deal with it. It's part of the job, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Yeah. It's yeah. Incredible. I think I would just turn into a puddle. I'd if Kimi started shouting at me on radio, I would just dissolve. I just couldn't cope with it. I think it's amazing that you keep so calm.
It does sound like he's being particularly mean sometimes, yeah. But then you've got to realize that he's in the heat at the moment. He's driving at 200 miles an hour.
Exactly.
And you can't take it too personally, can you?
No, absolutely. And I never took it personally. So.
Yeah, it's the only way. Can you, looking back over your career, can you pinpoint your very best or proudest moment out of all the teams, drivers that you've worked with? Is there one moment that really stands out?
The win in Abu Dhabi, because that was my first win with Kimi and that was absolutely exceptional. So if there is one point that stands out, is that. And probably also the podium with Romain in Spa, that was very emotional because we were having a lot of financial trouble in the team. And to be able to compete with Mercedes and Red Bull and Ferrari at the time, it was absolutely exceptional. So I would say that's the two proudest moments, probably.
If I be the bad guy and then flip that on its head, what's the worst moments?
Oh, I had many. Probably Mugello 2 years ago when they're starting to introduce this red flag every 5 seconds.
Oh, God, yeah.
And because you have to understand that the red flag is a rule that always existed in F1, but under Charlie Whiting, it was very rarely used. When Michael came in, he used this rule much more often. As soon as there was a crash, red flag. And you have to understand that we were prepared, but probably not as well as we would have been after. So it was all a bit chaotic. You could see all the people running in the pit lane, blah, blah. And I still remember I had a flight to take in the evening. And I said, at some point, I said, I'm going to miss my bloody flight. Then I had Kimi shouting on because we got a penalty, a 5 second penalty, because he crossed the pit entry. Then we had another red flag that was probably one of my worst race experience ever. So we didn't manage to score at the end, but not very pleasant.
No, it doesn't sound like much fun at all. And no. What I'm curious to get from you as well, from a race engineer's perspective, we've obviously got a very new-looking Formula One this year. We've got extremely, radically different cars. What impact do you think these new regulations will have on the sport from a technical perspective?
Well, simply speaking, these rules were made to improve the show and help the overtaking. So if you look especially the shape of the rear wing, the diffuser shape, all that has been made to make the dirty air flow behind the car going either on the side, up, but not straight at the following car, to help two car following better and overtaking. Because what you have to realize with the current cars we had last year, as soon as you are getting within half a second of a car, you start to lose the front. So basically, you start to understeer and you can't attack more, because if you attack more, you will start to overheat the front tires and you will kill your front tires. So what everything they try to do is to manage this dirty flow that the car is generating to allow car to follow. As simple as that. Will it work? We'll see race one. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we've already seen some really dramatically different approaches to the cars just from the first pictures that have come out from pre-season testing. So that's the great thing, I suppose. We're going to get lots of different developments. And then I suppose until they find the right one, then we'll suddenly start seeing them all going towards that design. But it's fascinating. It looks like it is a proper reset just in terms of the look of the cars as well. I think they look great.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. They do look very better than expected, I almost want to say so.
It's giving me 2008 vibes, really.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Do you think, though, that... Because there's a lot of talk about improving the show, you know, helping with overtaking. Does the show need improving? I mean, it feels like F1 right now is really buoyant, not just in terms of the racing, but in terms of the sponsors coming into the sport. It feels like it's in a really good place. Do we need this?
My personal feeling is that F1 never been an overtaking show. You know what I mean? It's always been a technological show where the manufacturer compete against each other to have the best solution. And look at the Ferrari days in the 2000, you know, when Ferrari was winning everything, then you had the Red Bull period with Vettel, then you had Mercedes. I mean, if they can make the car easier to overtake, why not? But for me, it's never been that important, to be honest with you. So,
yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's a technical thing. I guess it's a difficult one, because you've got the new generation of Formula One fans, the Netflix generation, Drive to Survive, and perhaps, you know, that for them they need to see that overtaking. I don't know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a difficult one to know. Okay, let's put you on the spot. What makes the perfect race car driver? What ingredients make up a great racer?
Feedback. He need. What I say always is, what makes Kimi so great is that obviously he has a lot of experience, but he knows exactly what the car is doing. He can give you a feeling, an incredible feeling of what the car is doing, and he can pinpoint you to the area where to improve it. And that's not something you see very often. You know what I mean? That's ability to feel via the steering wheel what the car, the feedback is giving him and what he needs to improve. That's, I think that's fundamental. And if you would have seen the feedback from Kimi, especially what he feels through the steering wheel is absolutely incredible. So, and that I've never seen, or very little, in all those drivers. So.
Wow. And then I imagine, I will ask you what makes up the perfect race car, but I imagine it's one that goes out and puts it on pole and then wins.
Exactly. Or you need to finish first, but first you need to finish. So.
Yes, very true. In looking back at your career, and we'll come on into a minute about what you're looking and doing for this year as well, but is there anything you would have done differently over your career so far?
I don't think so. I always try to steer my career a bit like same as a driver, you know, starting from the bottom. And I'm quite happy what I've achieved and so far. And no, I don't have any regrets, if that's your question.
Yeah, well, excellent. That's a way to live by, really. And then you mentioned earlier, you've got a YouTube channel as well where you've put some advice up there. Is that your name? How can people find that?
Via my name, it's a YouTube channel, or my company, JSC7 Engineering. So I'm very new on that, so I'm nowhere near as good as you guys in
YouTube.
I had to find a software to edit the video, to put pictures and things like this, but well, it's quite amateurial, but I did my best with the time I had. So they can find it either via my website, JSC7engineering.com, or searching my name, Julien Simon Chantal, on YouTube. So
And you do a great video about giving advice to young boys and girls who want to make their way up through this sport as well. And you've touched on some great things too. And is this all part of then your new venture that you're launching? Talk us about that. Talk to us about that.
So I've launched JSC7 Engineering last few weeks. And it's basically a consulting service company offering motorsport and automotive structure, all the know-how and experience I have from motorsport. I have over 20 years experience in motorsport, 14 years in F1, so I have a lot to offer, I feel. And I got the first contract with Canal Plus, which is very interesting for me. So I will be on air giving technical advice, both from their HQ in Paris or on site, a few selected events at the moment. So that's a new experience for me and a very, very, very interesting. And let's see how it goes. And then for the future, I hope to be able to contact more customers and more clients, and people will be happy to share my my passion and knowledge of F1.
It's fantastic. Well, best of luck with all of that. Now, we have a final three questions, which we ask all of our guests, and we'll fire the same ones at you. And these final three are brought to us by our friends at F1 Experiences. And the final three questions are brought to us by our friends at Rodin Cars. Harry, do you want to kick off with number one?
Absolutely. Julian, what's got you excited at the moment?
Building up this new venture is completely new. And I mean, when you have been working so long time, fully employed, you know, and then suddenly curtain and you say, no, I want to be my own boss, my new venture. And that's it's challenging, but it's extremely good. And I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, it's a big moment. Challenging, terrifying, but fun all at the same time.
All together.
Yeah, I can.
All together.
I
think terrifying, challenging, exciting. I have all the emotion all together.
Yeah, and then the wallet starts getting twitchy. You're like, oh, I need to start making some decent money here. But yeah, I think Harry and I can certainly share in your fear of going it alone, for sure. Second question for you: what's your favorite racing destination for whatever reason?
Probably there is many lovely places, but I always love Singapore. Yep. Because it's the first night race ever. The place is fantastic. The hotel, the lights, it's clean, it's safe. I love the place, basically.
Yeah, it's a good one. I can go along with that.
My brother went there a few years ago and said it was amazing, and watched the race. So jealous. What am I on the bucket list? Final one for you, Julian. What are you scared of?
What I'm scared of? Not being able to provide a good life to my family.
It makes me feel warm and fuzzy. I love that. That's a good one. But listen, absolutely fascinating to talk to you. It's really great to hear a different perspective. We've had a number of racing drivers on the show over the course of the last 18 months or so. And it's really interesting to hear from a race engineer's side what it's like to be in the inner workings of the sport. So thank you so much for joining us, and hopefully we'll see you in a paddock soon.
I'm sure you will.
Before you go, one final reminder to check out Rodin Cars. Forget a one-off experience. With Rodin and the Rodin FZ, you can become and live the life of an elite performance driver. With your very own Rodin FZ, you'll be able to drive a truly remarkable supercar, hunt down lap time, and search for ultimate performance. A solo cockpit, but never alone. With Rodin's incredible after-sale partnership, you'll be looked after on and off track with an official Formula Racing team running and maintaining your vehicle. And as an exclusive owner of a Rodin car, you'll get exclusive access to their circuit in New Zealand. So what are you waiting for? To find out how you can own the F1 lifestyle, find the perfect racing line, enjoy the thrill of a roaring engine, and experience the purity of driving, visit rodin-cars.com. Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth_, Instagram at Motormouth_official, and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can also download the Motormouth app, where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile, profile to interact with other fans and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. We're also proud to be supporting the Brain Tumor Charity too, so make sure you check the links in the podcast description to find out how you can help cure brain tumors quicker. Don't forget to like, subscribe and review, and until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth Podcast.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.